Good morning. This is a very diverse session, so we're on to criminal justice populations, but I've really enjoyed the other presentations. I have not thought about, for example, older adults, so this is a sort of interesting session. So I would like to acknowledge my co-authors, Amanda Berger and Matthew Epperson. And I have no financial relationships to disclose. So in the US, we arrest 8 million persons annually. And as you can see, and I'm sure as you know, the incarceration rate has risen dramatically over the past 30 years, and we currently have the highest incarceration rate in the world. So criminal justice involvement has become increasingly an important social force, and it's become endemic in many US communities. And yet, there's really little understanding of the influence of criminal justice involvement on health. There are alarming STI and HIV infection levels among those with criminal justice histories. So to give a baseline, in the US general population of adolescents and young adults, the prevalence of chlamydia and gonorrheal infections are 4 and less than 0.5%, respectively, which are unacceptable levels. Yet in the criminal justice populations, these levels of these bacterial STIs are much higher. So for example, in juvenile detention centers among male detainees, levels of chlamydial infection have ranged from 6 to 8%, and levels of gonorrhea are at 1%. And among female detainees in juvenile detention centers, levels of chlamydial infection range from 14 to 24%, and of gonorrhea is approximately 5%. In adult populations, levels of these infections also are elevated, and we have evidence of 3 to 5 times the levels of HIV infection in adult populations in criminal justice settings compared within the general population. In addition, we have less evidence, less understanding of the arrestee population compared with the detained population, but there also is elevated levels of infection and risk behavior in this population. So there are many factors that drive STI among those in the criminal justice system. So key factors such as poverty, substance use, mental illness, and limited access to care are disproportionately clustered in this population and should be considered when understanding transmission dynamics and control efforts. A question underlying this research, however, is criminal justice involvement itself also an STI risk factor independent of these adverse background factors? So I'll give an example of how criminal justice involvement may be linked to STI risk. This is one example, and please keep in mind there are many other pathways. So for example, incarceration is a disruptive life event. It disrupts social and sexual networks, including primary partnerships, and primary partnerships are protective against high-risk partnerships. So for example, during the period of incarceration, the partner of the prisoner who's left in the community may choose to seek new and multiple partners to fill companionship needs or even financial needs. And then after release, absence of a partner with freedom from restriction on sexual behaviors may lead the newly released inmate to seek new and multiple partners, again, to fill companionship or financial needs. In addition, incarceration could promote a particular type of high-risk partnership called concurrent partnerships, which are partnerships that overlap in time. So having sex with partner A and then partner B and then partner A again, if the newly released inmate seeks a new partner and then returns to the original partner shortly thereafter. So there's evidence that arrest and incarceration are associated with STI risk behaviors, including multiple and concurrent partnerships, independent of factors such as poverty and substance use. A gap in the literature, however, is few studies have examined the link between criminal justice involvement and sexually transmitted infection itself, controlling for these background factors, including poverty and substance use. And no prior study, to our knowledge, has examined the relative influence of potential influence of juvenile versus adult criminal justice involvement and adulthood STI. So if criminal justice involvement is associated with elevated STI risk, earlier exposure to criminal justice involvement, if it persists, may mean greater levels of exposure, or the timing of the exposure early in adolescence may have more deleterious effects on the trajectory of the individual who's become involved in the criminal justice system. So this leads us to think that there's a potential for heightened vulnerability among juveniles, adolescents who become involved in the criminal justice system. So the aim of this study was to measure juvenile and adult criminal justice involvement and its relationship to STI in adulthood. We use the National Longitudinal Study of Adolescent Health, or AdHealth, which is a prospective cohort study. This is a school-based sample, which yields nationally representative estimates when survey weights are used. So in wave one in 1995, over 20,000 adolescents were recruited and responded to an in-home questionnaire. And then 6 years later, they were re-interviewed in wave three, and they answered another questionnaire, and then on that questionnaire, a number of criminal justice indicators were assessed, including juvenile and adult criminal justice involvement. And so at wave one, they're adolescents, and wave three, they're young adults. In addition, at wave three, they also tested for three sexually transmitted infections, chlamydia, gonorrhea, and trichomoniasis. So we have three indicators of juvenile criminal justice involvement that we looked at: a history of arrest as a juvenile, history of repeat arrest as a juvenile, and being convicted of a crime as a juvenile and serving a sentence of probation or juvenile detention, incarceration in juvenile detention center. And the referent group was the adolescent, the respondents who had no history of conviction as a juvenile. We had three comparable criminal justice, adult criminal justice involvement indicators. So history of arrest as an adult, history of repeat arrest, and then history of being convicted as an adult and serving a sentence of probation, jail incarceration, or prison incarceration. The outcome again was adult STI, so anyone who tested positive for one of the three STIs was coded as having an STI. So we examined the relationship between criminal justice involvement and STI using logistic regression for survey data, and we estimated unadjusted and adjusted odds ratios and 95% confidence intervals. And the adjusted analyses included a number of covariates, including age at first sex as a baseline measure of risk behavior, demographic and socioeconomic factors, substance use, and a juvenile delinquency variable, because again, we're trying to isolate an effect of criminal justice involvement above and beyond the personality or background factors that may lead an individual to the criminal justice system and to risk behaviors that lead to infection. So for the results. So for juvenile criminal justice involvement, 5% of respondents had been arrested as a youth and adolescents. 2% had been convicted of a crime, and 0.5% had been incarcerated in a juvenile detention center for the first adult conviction. 10% had been arrested as an adult, 5% had been convicted, and 0.7% had been incarcerated in jail, and 0.2% in prison for the first adult conviction. And the prevalence of STI in this group was approximately 6%. So I wanted to point out that this is not lifetime history of incarceration. These levels of incarceration are very low because this is incarceration for the first conviction in the juvenile or adult period. So I will present the results in this graphical format. The blue dots are the odds ratios, and the white lines drawn from the blue dots are the 95% confidence intervals. And the horizontal line represents the null, so any blue dot that you see at that line would indicate no association between the criminal justice indicator and STI. Anything above the line indicates there is an association between juvenile criminal justice involvement and STI. So for example, respondents with a history of arrest in adolescence had 1.6 times the odds of STI in adulthood. This is an unadjusted analysis. And then in analyses adjusting for all of the factors I named, the odds ratio weakened somewhat to 1.4, but it generally remained. History of having repeated arrest as a juvenile in unadjusted and adjusted analyses was associated with approximately twice the odds of STI in adulthood. Oops, sorry. So now for probation and incarceration, being convicted of a crime as a juvenile and serving a sentence of probation in adjusted analyses was associated with 2.3 times the odds of STI in adulthood. And serving a sentence of incarceration in a juvenile detention center was associated with for the first conviction as a juvenile, was associated with 3.7 times the odds of STI. So we're getting this picture from the juvenile indicators that one-time arrest or ever having been arrested is modestly to moderately associated with STI, higher levels of involvement, so repeat arrest, more strongly associated, and then incarceration, even more strongly associated with STI in adulthood. Now for the adult indicators. So adult arrest tended to be less strongly associated with STI compared with the indicators of juvenile arrest. So adults who had a history of arrest, respondents who had a history of arrest as an adult in both unadjusted and adjusted analyses had these modest elevations in STI. The odds ratio was 1.3. History of repeat arrest was non-significantly associated with elevated levels of STI. And going to the probation and incarceration, we see that being convicted as an adult and serving for the first conviction sentence of probation was not an indicator of elevated levels of STI. The STI levels were comparable in both the groups. Being sentenced to jail conviction for the first adult conviction was somewhat but non-significantly associated with STI. The odds ratio in the adjusted analysis was 1.7. And being and serving a sentence of prison incarceration for the first conviction was associated with 3.5 times the level of STI. So this odds ratio has a very imprecise estimate. The 95% confidence interval is very wide because the levels of prison incarceration for the first adult conviction are so low. So, but yet, so this hovers at statistical significance, but the strength of the association is so strong that it would lend some evidence to the idea that prison incarceration is an independent correlate of STI. So we also looked at the relationship between criminal justice involvement and multiple partnerships, which are a key driver of STI. So juvenile and adult arrest and incarceration were both associated with high elevations in multiple partnership levels, so between 2 to 5 times the prevalence of multiple partnerships in adulthood. Juvenile incarceration and adult arrest and incarceration were independently associated with multiple partnerships in adulthood when controlling for all of the background factors, confounding factors. So in summary, both juveniles and adults who report any contact with the criminal justice system experience elevated risk of STI in adulthood. Arrest is moderately and incarceration is strongly associated with STI in adulthood. And juvenile offenders appear to be at greater risk compared with adult offenders, although both groups have elevations in infection. This study, along with many other studies, points to the need, or the fact that offenders constitute a priority population for prevention of subsequent STI, and that among juveniles, the repeat offenders in particular are priority population. So the findings also suggest that arrest and incarceration are, because they're associated with STI independent of these confounding factors, that criminal justice involvement, in concert with all of the other important factors I named, including poverty and substance use, may contribute to STI in adulthood, and that this may happen because criminal justice involvement may increase levels of partnership exchange, levels of multiple partnerships. So the study was limited by a number of factors, including the potential for unmeasured confounding factors. This is always my biggest concern. So there are many social, economic, and personality factors that we couldn't measure and couldn't include in models that could be driving the relationship between these two variables. Secondly, this was not a fully longitudinal analysis because the indicators of criminal justice involvement in STI were both collected at wave 3, but it had elements of a longitudinal analysis because we had the baseline levels of risk taking in adolescence that we were able to control for. There were limited indicators of criminal justice involvement compared with other batteries. This is a limitation. And finally, this is a school-based sample. So the sampling frame may have included important populations, such as school dropouts, that may have influenced the estimates. This would be an example of a selection bias. The implications are that there's a great need for correctional facility-based and community-based STI and HIV interventions to reach current and former prisoners. The priority venues include jails, prisons, and juvenile detention centers. And again, a priority population for services to be targeted towards are the juvenile repeat offenders. In addition, we need to further explore the effects of incarceration and arrest on STI risk using longitudinal data and examining the potential pathways through which criminal justice involvement may influence STI risk. So, for example, looking at effects of partnership disruption during the period of criminal justice involvement as a potential pathway. In addition, our research and potentially programs should examine alternatives to incarceration for nonviolent offenders as a means of reducing network disruption and elevations in risk-taking and infection. So I would like to acknowledge the National Institute on Drug Abuse, which provided funding for this research through a small grant. Thank you.
now we have a few minutes for questions. Any questions? No.
So in prior studies and other samples, not forced sex, but transactional sex certainly has been examined as an outcome and is associated with criminal justice, with incarceration. But in this study using AdHealth, we haven't yet looked at it. One reason is the real determinant of infection is the numbers of partners. So whether or not it's for trade of money, with money, drugs, or services, or whatever. And so that's the sort of direct determinant of STI. So that's what we've chosen as our sort of sexual risk indicator. And also there has been some criticism because, you know, involvement in the criminal justice system may result from transactional sex. And so it's sort of a tautology, reverse causality potentially. But thank you for the forced sex, because we certainly should have some indicators of that in AdHealth. We didn't, for this study, we didn't measure concurrency. The outcome, well, the main outcome was STI, and we looked at multiple partnerships as an outcome, as a potential STI risk factor. In prior studies that I've conducted, looking at incarceration and concurrency, we used indicators of concurrency that were based on a date method. So, for example, individuals were asked to name the last three partners they had, they were asked to name the dates of the first and last sex, and then a measure of concurrency was created such that, you know, it was clear that the partnership A occurred first, and then partnership B, and then partnership A again, based on the date measurement of concurrency. So you have to go back in time and ask people to recall their partnerships to make sure that there is indeed an overlap in the calendar year. Mm-hmm. So the measure for this study, the measure of multiple partnerships, was partnerships in the past year. Mm-hmm. Well, this is a limitation of this study, and that the criminal justice indicators, well, the limitation particularly applies to the looking at the relationship between adult involvement and multiple partnerships in the past year, less so with the juvenile indicators. But certainly, I mean, the relationship between juvenile and justice involvement and multiple partnerships that we looked at would be less prone to be biased by some sort of cross-sectional bias, because the juvenile incarceration and arrest happened during the adolescent period, and then the adult indicators were assessed 6 years later. In terms of the adult, looking at the relationship between adult arrest and incarceration and STI and multiple partnerships, it's possible that the incarceration could have happened in the year prior, and the multiple partnerships are happening the year prior, so it's a cross-sectional analysis in that respect, and so that's a limitation. Mm-hmm. Yes? There's a great variety of, I mean, it depends on the jail and depends on the state. What did you ask? What are the testing and treatment? Well, there's really a great heterogeneity depending on the state, and even within the state, depending on the ability of the local jail or prison and the protocol there. So that we're getting better at doing it for HIV, but for STDs, there really is not consistent screening in jails or prisons. I think it's more sort of based on signs and symptoms for the STIs that we looked at in this study. So this is a limitation. Jails are even more chaotic than the prison setting. So even HIV infection, while there are great elevations in HIV infection in jail populations, it's often very hard to operationalize screening in that setting because it's such a high, it's a chaotic setting and there's not a lot of time to do it. So this is sort of a big push now in the field, is to try to figure out ways of operationalizing that. That's a good question.
I have a question for Jamie. I really appreciate the application of the journals for the intervention, but for many of us doing research and practicing the health education, I would like to know, how was the experience of getting consent from the parents to use the journals?
So that's an excellent question. Basically, we have consent during several studies. During our first couple of studies, we did not have parental consent for the programs. Now we're in the process of getting parental consent, and overall it's been fine. Actually involving the parents more, we've actually had found to have greater attendance rates for our programs once we started involving the parents. So I think we're going to continue using that method.
That's it?
Great. Thank you so much.
Any other questions? Have any other comment that you would like to share? Well, thank you, all the presenters, and thank you, all of you. It was a great discussion about different populations in different settings. So I think that also highlights the fact that health education and public health in general has so much influence and work to do in different groups, in different settings, and particularly with sexual health. So thank you. Thank you all. Have a nice day.